Hey, denk dran, dass auch dein Immunsystem Hunger hat. Und probier's mal mit den Gesundheitszielen zur Ernährung in der App Auka Navida. Hol dir Tipps, Rezepte und Challenges für dein gesünderes Ich. Jetzt die App Auka Navida downloaden und loslegen. Auka Plus. Aus Liebe zur Gesundheit.
The Axe of the Blood God.
Welcome to another episode of Axe of the Blood God, US Gamer's official RPG podcast. I'm your host, Kat Bailey, and with me, as always, my lovely co-host, Nadia Oxford.
Hello, Kat. It's great to have you back. I told everyone you were dead, but no, you're alive. It was all an elaborate ruse. You're okay.
I heard that some usurper came in and took over the podcast while I was away.
Boy, did he ever. A couple of usurpers, actually. We had Anthony John Agnello, and we had John Learned, which was a lot of fun, actually, to be completely honest with you.
What did you all talk about while I was away?
Ah, gosh, we talked about, like, the thing that strikes me most is we talked about Castlevania last week, which I don't know if it breaks your rules, but we broke the rules. We went to bed late, we ate all the candy, and we talked about Castlevania, specifically Area of Sorrow, and its 15th anniversary.
Nice. Yeah, I don't know. I don't care. Like, we've broken the rules before on this podcast. I mean, we've talked about Zelda on this podcast.
We have, very much.
There are times where it's just like, I want to talk about this game. I'm going to talk about this game. Don't care. I feel like we talked about Metal Gear Solid at one point on this podcast just because we wanted to.
Yeah.
Because I had just gotten back from playing it, and I was just like, I want to talk about it and don't have any other podcasts to talk about it. So I'm going to talk about it here. So deal with it, but
we do because we're adults.
Yes, I was in Morocco for 10 days, and I was in the UK for a few days before that. Got horrifically ill when I got back from Morocco.
Ooh.
Just now getting over that illness, but I'm okay now.
That's good.
I'm gonna be able to get through the podcast, but yeah, Morocco, very interesting place. Strongly recommend it if you can ever go. Food is not so great, but then again, I don't eat meat.
Don't eat the food.
Yeah, I don't eat meat, which is kind of the problem. I feel like so much of the best food there is probably meat-based.
Yeah, would they eat a lot of, like, lamb and stuff? Because I love lamb so much.
Oh, yeah, they eat a lot of lamb. I could almost hear Nadia drooling through
the
mic.
Microphone.
She's just like, oh, yeah. We had a lot of couscous, and we had a thing called tagine, which is this these vegetables with kind of this Moroccan spice palette, and frankly, it's a little bland, but they had this really good soup called harira.
Oh, I love soup. What was in the soup?
It was like kind of a lentily soup with some okay spices. It's very basic food for the most part, so... Yeah, but anyway, we rode the train from Fez to Casablanca to Marrakesh, and... saw the deserts, and we did not ride a camel.
I was actually going to ask you, why did you decide to go to Morocco? What spurred the decision?
Well, it's kind of my goal to get a new country every year, and I think that if you can travel, you should. It's a belief of mine, and I'm lucky enough to have the means and the health to be able to travel.
Right.
So I do that. I do that a lot. While I'm still able to, and I make it sound like I'm a million years old, but you know, at a certain point, I'm going to get old and my body will break down. So I want to be able to see the world now. So I try to get a new country every year. I've never been to Africa.
Mm-hmm.
And my partner's father went to Morocco back in the 60s when he was in college, just on a whim.
Right.
And so I think Morocco was always kind of like, it was always just a thing where it's like, we're going to go to Morocco. We're going to see what he saw. And we saw a lot of bags. Bags hanging on hooks in markets.
Because
there are two things that Morocco is known for is metalworking and leather.
And yeah, that's pretty cool, though. I actually really want to go to like where my ancestors come from. I want to go to Ireland. I want to go to Hungary. But I'm just going to sit here for now and podcast.
Morocco had two former Jewish quarters because apparently the Sultan... allowed a large number of Jews to come in and settle during the diaspora. Mm-hmm. And so I think in Fez, at least, I think the Jewish quarters are now abandoned.
Yeah.
but you can still see like how different the kind of architecture was, because, you know, they were building their own houses and everything. Yeah, it's kind of a neat feature.
That's another thing I really love to do is go around the world and see like just how the different Jewish cultures, how many are remaining anyway, or at least see where they were. One regret I had when I was in Japan is I didn't have enough time to like, there was actually a kosher deli run by a Jewish guy somewhere in Tokyo that I really wanted to visit, but I never got a chance. Didn't have enough time.
Jewish tourism.
Yeah.
Yeah, you mentioned Tokyo. Bob's actually in Tokyo. I'm extremely jealous of him right now.
Yeah, I've been looking at his stuff. He made a little shiny penny print out of a Dragon Quest thing, like one of those machines. You know, you turn the crank and it makes your penny into a token. He made one of a Dragon Quest slime. I'm very jealous.
You and Bob both got to go to Japan for the first time this year. It's amazing.
Oh, has Bob never been to Japan?
Bob's never been to Japan, oh, if you can believe it or not.
He's having a great time.
This is like the second time he ever left the country. So
really?
He always used to tell me, he's like, I've never even been out of the country for, I mean, because, I mean, I don't want to say too much, but yeah, no. So this is the first time he gets to go to Japan, and he's doing all of the things that, you know,
right.
It's just making me homesick as all get out right now. He's taking pictures of himself in Akihabara.
Yeah.
He's taking pictures of the Scramble Crossing, and it's hurting my soul because I'm like, I want to go home now. What the hell?
I'd love to go back just for have a longer time to visit.
How long did you get?
I got like maybe 3 days. So it really wasn't long at all. And my days were spoken for because basically I was with like Square Enix the whole time.
Oh yeah, no, I totally know what you mean. I've been meaning to go back for like 2 years.
Mm-hmm.
The last time I went in like, okay, the last time I was there was 2016. But I've been meaning to take a longer trip just for fun, as opposed to going for work in some capacity.
Right.
Yeah. And I'm really determined the next time I go to get off the usual track, which is such a privilege, like, oh, Japan. It's like, oh, I don't want to see all the usual stuff. I don't want to see Akihabara or Nakano Broadway or Shibuya. That's the stuff for the newbies. I want to get into the stuff that's new and interesting. But I have seen those things 100 times, and I've walked through those same places 1,000 times, and it's just like, I know, like, Japan is such a rich and amazing, incredible place, and I want to strike out a little more and break out of my comfort zone a little more.
Yeah, I'd love to go to Kyoto and see the more nature oriented stuff.
Kyoto's amazing.
Yeah.
Dylan Cuthbert, who helped program Star Fox, and he runs Q Games out there. He's a big Kyoto proponent.
Right.
And he'll talk your ear off about how much better Kyoto is than Tokyo. It's kind of the difference between, well, frankly, it's the difference between, say, San Francisco and London.
Right.
Right? One is kind of a small, easy to get around, but very cultured city. Mm-hmm. And the other one is a mega metropolis.
Right.
Huge. It takes, like, hours to get from one end of the other to the other, side to the other. So, and it's all, like, it really depends on your tastes, to be perfectly honest. But if I ever go back and live in Japan, and I would like to, actually, I would go live in Kansai, get some of that street food in Osaka, live in Kyoto. It's such a beautiful area. It's so beautiful.
You have a plan.
But speaking of Japan, and I mean, when isn't Japan an appropriate segue for this podcast?
I totally agree. This is 100% legit.
So yeah, we're going to talk about Kingdom Hearts 3, which was finally shown. Oh, I think it was just yesterday, as of the recording of this podcast, Mike was on the ground in LA to check it out and record his thoughts. And we're also going to be talking about SMT Strange Journey Redux. I would also like to talk about Pillars of Eternity 2, which kind of got lost, kind of fell between the cracks, and is certainly worth talking about because, I mean, it's a great Western RPG. It's really important. We gave it an excellent review. We passed it off to our extremely able freelancer, Doc Burford, and he gave it a glowing review.
Yeah, he did.
We'll try to have him on the podcast, I think, next week. But for now, let's talk about kind of the games at hand. So Kingdom Hearts 3, I mean, wow. Nadia, I can't believe it's actually coming out.
Yeah, if they're going to flake out and cancel this on us somehow or just like shove it under the carpet somewhere, they'll be throwing away a lot of work because this looks to be pretty far along, to be honest with you.
I think finally Nomura knuckled down and actually made it happen.
Or somebody stood behind him with a stick and said, okay, this is happening or your life.
So every time he started to scrap a piece of artwork, somebody just pulled out a cattle prod and went, or they said, here's the deal, Nomura. We're taking away your cigarettes until you frickin' finish this game.
Oh, is he a big smoker?
Apparently, he is a very large smoker.
That's one way to get a smoker to get something done.
He sits around and he smokes and he smokes. And look, I've never met the man and I've never worked with him. I'm only going off rumors. So, but there have been many stories about Tetsuya Nomura over the years. And, well, I mean, this game has been 12 years in the making.
Oh,
this,
my God.
The last time a proper numbered Kingdom Hearts came out, and I'm not talking about 1.5 mm-hmm. or 2.8. or whatever, it was 2006, and I had just moved to Japan. That's a long time.
That's a long time. I think on the other podcast, when we still had it, RIP, I asked Katie, were you in, like, middle school when, when Kingdom Hearts 2 was a thing? And she did the math, and yes, she was, apparently.
Yeah, okay, so Katie was certifiably a baby.
Yep.
I'm pretty sure Hiren wasn't born yet.
Probably not.
And... Hiren's our guides writer, and we goof on him for being very much the baby of the staff. But Kingdom Hearts 2, I mean, it just came out so long ago, and there was that gap, right? Mm-hmm. Do you remember this gap? And then there was the announcement that there were games coming out for the DS and
yes.
the Vita.
Yes.
Or not the Vita, the PSP.
The PSP, yeah.
This was how long ago it was. It was before the Vita. It was that other system that was actually much more successful than the Vita,
yeah.
the PSP. And it was like, what was it? There was Kingdom Hearts 358 over 2 days.
Or something, Birth by Sleep, I think, was on the PSP. And
yes. And then there was another one for the DS. And forgive me,
was
like...
Was it Dream Drop Distance? Or was that
yes,
the 3DS?
Dream Drop Distance came out for the 3DS.
Okay.
Jeez. Because it was the 3Ds, Dream
oh.
Drop Distance.
Oh, I learned a thing here. Okay. Huh.
Yes. And that had Neku from The World Ends With You.
Oh, really? Oh, that's right. Okay. I remember,
yeah.
I don't know if you pay attention or watch Johnny Versus, but it's a series I like a lot on YouTube. And he actually went through all the Kingdom Hearts games and one by one. And you kind of see him losing his patience as he goes on with the story. But yeah, I remember now that Neku was in that game.
Yeah. So, so all of this was understood as kind of being a bridge to Kingdom Hearts 3, and I think that there have been Kingdom Hearts 3 rumors and wanting Kingdom Hearts 3 and desperately waiting for Kingdom Hearts 3 as long as I've been in the games press, and I've been in the games press for almost 10 years at this point.
Yeah.
No, I have been in the games press
yeah,
for 10
yeah.
years at
and
this point.
It's the same with me because I remember... Gosh, I started around 2004 is when I really started to get into it. So, yep.
This reminds me of the whole Final Fantasy 15 thing, right?
Oh, yes.
A game that literally had to be taken away from Nomura, I assume. Well, in any case, it went to a different director because Nomura no longer had time for it. And they basically had to scrap a large chunk of it and pretty much make a new game
yeah.
based on kind of what was there and tried to cobble together something really fast in time to finally get it out. And that's a whole different podcast. But Tetsuya Nomura, but then to Goose credit, Nomura sat down and was like, I'm going to finish Kingdom Hearts 3. And also I have Final Fantasy VII Remake on my table. And I got too many projects.
Yeah, he kind of does.
Stop giving the man too many projects, Square Enix. Stop giving him.
Yeah, you should probably let him finish one thing at a time and make sure he finishes those things like within a reasonable time frame and we're not all getting old and having grandchildren by the time we're going to be playing Final Fantasy VII Remake.
I mean, it's too late. I'm already 70 years old. I'm no longer able to travel. Kingdom Hearts 3.
Hi, we're from the future.
Yes, so future me just came in through the transporter and said, It's all a lie. Kingdom Hearts 3 is not coming out. Either that or we don't want Kingdom Hearts 3 to come out because, in fact, it will signify the end of the world. This is it.
Yeah, yeah. This is one of the catalysts. This is one of the horsemen. They have a lot of zippers.
I mean, in a way, I was sad that Final Fantasy 15 came out because then I didn't have it to look forward to anymore. It's kind of like Persona 5. We waited for so long for Persona 5 to come out, and then it came out, and I was like, well, now what?
Now you wait for the next Persona.
And then I wait for Persona 6.
There you go.
Obviously.
Yeah.
My fear is always that they're not going to make it another one that's kind of in that style, that they'll abandon the style that I like, and it'll be like, well, no, the series that I like is totally dead now. Cool.
I'll make it a free-to-play mobile game.
But, yeah, I hope Kingdom Hearts fans are ready, because Kingdom Hearts 4 is going to be another 15 years after that.
Yeah, if you're lucky.
Yeah, if you're lucky. Yeah, but finally, Kingdom Hearts 3, it's here, it's playable, Mike played it, he held it, it seems pretty cool for the most part. There are two sections, he was saying, the first and the shorter of the two is Olympus.
Again.
The world of Disney's Hercules. Why are we going back to Hercules?
Because, I guess.
So the only reason... So when the original Kingdom Hearts came out in 2001,
mm-hmm.
I think Hercules was pretty new.
Hercules was very new at that point, yes.
It might have come out in 2000, I want to say?
Yeah.
And it was kind of one of the last of the, you know, the golden age of Disney.
Yeah,
right?
You're right. Oh, God. No, yeah. It was before 2000, because I remember I used part of it for an anime music video I made in school. Yeah. I know it doesn't officially make it anime, but there was a lot of anime mixed up in there, too.
Oh, bless. You actually made That reminds me, when I was in Morocco, it's just an aside, we were staying in a riad in Marrakesh, and there was this caretaker kind of host who was just a living caretaker.
Mm-hmm.
And we were sitting and having mint tea. Mint tea is main drinks of Morocco. Rot your teeth right out of your head. It's just sugar and mint and hot water, but it's delicious.
Yeah.
Oh, it's so good. And we hear the familiar streams of, I tried so hard, I got so far. And we're like, what? Is it 2000? Holy crap. Yeah, so apparently we found one of the only remaining Linkin Park bands.
Aww.
The backdrop of so many anime music videos from over the years. It was incredible.
Linkin Park was anime music videos back in the day. But I'm even talking about before then. This is before, like, I used an actual analog editing suite. I didn't have any computer stuff. Like, my high school had an analog editing suite for some reason.
You used to download those AMVs off Kazaa.
With a virus or two.
Or Kazaa, oh my god, I think my virus was just infected with so many STDs, it wasn't even funny. Or my computer, like my poor laptop, I'm surprised it even ran. I'm sitting there for like 2 days downloading videos. This is me waving my cane, get off my lawn, kids.
Before YouTube.
But I digress, but yeah, no, that Linkin Park and Evanescence.
Evanescence,
yeah, it was a real blast from the past, but... I digress. So anyway, kind of a weird thing to go back to Hercules, but hey, Hades it's actually secretly one of the best Disney villains.
Honestly, if they get James Wood in for Hades, I'm down. I don't care.
Isn't James Wood crazy?
He's crazy, but he's a really good Hades, which I guess is fitting. But yeah, he's a dick, but he's a good Hades.
Isn't he one of those people who gets on Twitter and just goes off?
He goes off, name it, SJWs this, and that, snowflakes,
okay.
Blah, 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 liberals, yeah, whatever.
Gotcha. Yes, because I remember him, he was a guest star on The Simpsons, and so he came up on Talking Simpsons, and they were like, don't read his Twitter feed. I'm like,
was so good on The Simpsons, too. There you go. I still think, no good mother, beep, 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 cheese. No, not you, the microwave.
I gotta say, it was real nice getting away from Twitter when I was in Morocco, because every time I turned on my phone, I felt like it was screaming at me.
This is costing you 10 cents for every second.
It didn't matter if I agreed with them, disagreed with them, it felt like everybody was on full blast all the time.
And they usually are. That is Twitter. Sometimes I just turn it off and I'm okay. I go play video games.
It was a wall of screaming that I could not hear. coming out of my phone. But so anyway, yeah, so we're going back to Hercules, which in the original game was a Colosseum,
right?
Just a Colosseum, and it was mostly notable for if you got far enough, you could fight Sephiroth.
Right. Oh, Lord.
Which was so badass in 2001 or 2002, whenever this game came out. I think it was 2002. Yeah, 2002. And yeah, no, he was so badass because, I mean, this was a PS2.
Yeah.
And you got to see Sephiroth with a mouth.
They kind of gave him a mouth in the remakes, like for the, not the remakes, but the re-releases for Steam and PS4. But it's just like this kind of weird open sex doll mouth is really disturbing. disconcerting rather.
Mm.
But yeah, an actual living mouth. That was new.
Yeah, I mean, he looked like the person. He looked amazing. His model was incredible. He had the one-winged angel thing going on and everything. And he was really hard, really hard. Mm-hmm. And then you also had Cloud showing up.
Yes.
And
bandages on his fucking sword.
Yes, the bandages on the sword and the cape. And this was the beginning of badass. What was the movie that came out in 2005 called... I forget it. I can never remember the name of the dang movie, but you know what I mean. You know what I mean. Like at the end of Final Fantasy VII, they were like, "We have deconstructed the hero and built him back up and everything, and let's mosey." But then they come. Then they said, "Actually, let's just play the archetype straight." But Cloud is the badass hero now.
Yeah, that's not Advent Children, is it?
Advent Children.
Okay,
that's
so that was it. So, yeah. Yes. I was a little bit pissed about that because he was, they made him like kind of emo and badass when he was never really much like that in Final Fantasy VII, but that's a whole other conversation.
So, but the new section is not just the Olympus Coliseum. This one actually puts Sora, Donald, and Goofy up against the Titans of Myth, Mike says. Mm-hmm. A giant hulking beast of stone that's throwing rocks down at the team from a high mountain. This sounds like God of War 3, to be perfectly honest.
with less, a little less bloody, maybe.
End up stabbing Zeus through the face with the Keyblade.
I'm here for that.
Cutting off his head and carrying it around as a trophy. But apparently one of the things that's immediately apparent is the new vertical nature of Sora's movement. So there's a new auto-running feature, which is interesting, which is automatically vaulting over small rocks, boxes, and platforms, other objects in his way. And as you see these walls with a persistent sheen, you run into one and Sora will keep going in the same direction up the wall.
Wow.
You can even change direction. It feels a little like something similar to what they were doing with Final Fantasy 15, where you could beam all over the place.
Yeah,
like
you can warp all over
the place.
This
sense of constant movement that is frankly a little confusing and insane, but does feel pretty anime.
Yeah, it's very, very Dragon Ball Z-ish, but kind of fun.
Yes. There's a new thing called reaction commands, which is introduced via attractions. And attractions are special attacks that are situational and based on rides from Disney theme parks.
Here comes a Dumbo ride. It's going to fall apart under you and kill everything under
you. Well, one of them's like Big Magic Mountain, which is based on Big Thunder Mountain Railroad. And it's a mighty flying train that soars around the beast and shoots fireworks at it.
Wow.
And the attractions are regional, okay? Mm. So, but there's also summons.
Right.
Where you're summoning Disney characters like Ariel from The Little Mermaid, who's attacking, which is, that's kind of cool.
Yeah, that's definitely cool. Wasn't that in the previous games too, though? Like, you could summon Disney characters or their attacks?
No, I think you summoned other characters in the past, but... I could be wrong on that front.
Hmm.
I will say that one of the criticisms of past Kingdom Hearts games, and I agree with them, has been, especially in the spin-offs, like Birth by Sleep, we weren't getting quite enough Disney.
Absolutely. That is my one massive complaint about Kingdom Hearts, and the one thing that has definitely kept me away. And if they can find a way to rectify that this time around, and not shove the story up its own ass within the first 10 minutes. Yeah, I'm on board.
I believe it or not, in the original Kingdom Hearts, I was one of those people who wanted more Final Fantasy.
That's funny.
I like Disney, but I've never been a Disney super fan like some of my friends. I know there are people who are like just crazy for those movies and for those worlds and everything. And I will admit, like, I really enjoyed Frozen and Tangled. I really enjoyed, obviously I love Pixar. Mm-hmm. I have just a huge amount of admiration for Beauty and the Beast, but I'm not going to say like, oh, this like super creates soaring joy in my heart. I mean, right. Maybe if Kingdom Hearts had a Gundam world, that would be a little different, but Nadia, how do you feel about Disney?
I am very hot or cold on Disney. I like it very much. Like, I actually watched Mulan on the plane down to Japan, and I used to like be so in love with that movie when I was like 18.
And it's kind of a gem. I mean, it's a little feels a little truncated, but I love the "Be a Man" song.
Great
song.
A great song. That's 100% like still okay. That aged fine, but. The rest of it is kind of so-so. I'm watching it now and saying, like, oh, okay, so Japan, China, and Korea all have the same culture now, just kind of molded into one thing. Oh, okay, whatever. But I still love Mushu, I have to admit.
Mm. Yeah. I really identified with Mulan struggling with femininity mm-hmm. in the opening parts of the story and
yeah, absolutely.
All of that thing. So
yeah, I can definitely say that.
Yeah, good movie. Ultimately, but yeah, so yeah, it, like I said, mileage will vary for Disney fanatics. Of course, Disney or Kingdom Hearts is basically a thing. And one thing, and I always kind of wonder is like, why did Square Enix go in this direction? Mm-hmm. And then I went to Japan.
Oh, yes.
And discovered how much the Japanese love Disney. Oh my God.
Yeah.
They have two Disney theme parks in near Tokyo, and like it is the primo destination for boys to take girls or any sort of pairing to take to on a romantic getaway mm-hmm. to go to Disney Sea or Tokyo Disneyland. And Disney is such a ridiculous thing, and it's such a major selling point. And I remember years ago, oh God, I must have been on Role Players Realm or something. I was basically arguing that Kingdom Hearts was the most major Japanese property that Square Enix had. Like, it had the most mainstream crossover, more so even than Final Fantasy.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
What do you think of that?
I feel like that's a good point. I just feel like if it had been less Square Enix and more Disney, then it would have been maybe more of a force in that direction. I am actually very interested to see if Square Enix will be kind of reined in with a story in this kind of post, you know, Disney owns everything age, year of our Disney.
I couldn't believe that Leonard Nimoy was in Kingdom Hearts.
Who did he play?
He played a villain.
Oh my God, I forgot about that.
I don't know why he would do that, but whatever. rest in peace, Leonard Nimoy.
He's pretty awesome.
I don't have a huge problem with the lore. It got a little involved, got a little crazy. I think a lot of people just want the nostalgia ride through the different worlds.
Yeah.
But I think in some ways, some people have posited that Square Enix was hedging its bets effectively.
Mm-hmm.
In case they lost the Disney license, they could keep Kingdom Hearts going.
Right. Yeah, I've heard that. And that... It definitely checks out, although it's kind of funny how with the handheld versions of the game, it kind of got less Disney and more Square Enix when everything was secured by that point.
Yeah. So the second part of the demo is much longer, and it's the Toy Story side. Mm-hmm. The one that we've known about forever since we saw the demo. And I remember seeing that demo and thinking, oh my God, finally we've arrived. Like, this looks like a 1995 CG film. This is great.
We've come full circle.
At last, the promise of the PS2 is realized. Apparently, Rex, the T-Rex, is a fan of Sora because a version of Sora is named Yozora, and he's the hero of a best-selling video game in the Toy Story universe. So this is all getting very meta.
That is a little bit meta.
Yeah. And so you can run around in Andy's room and, you know, you're fighting Heartless and everything. And yeah, the Wreck-It Ralph arcade game is in Andy's room as well, which I think is pretty neat. The Fix-It Felix Jr. Did you ever play that game?
I did, actually. is very. It was pretty cute. I love Wreck-It Ralph. So talking about the Disney movies that I liked, I really did enjoy that one very much.
Was that a Disney movie?
Yeah, it was.
It must have been because it's in Kingdom Hearts, right? Everything's Disney. I should just assume everything is Disney at this point.
Like I said, Year of Our Disney, 180.
I really enjoyed that game or that movie. I liked the twist at the end.
Yeah.
I wasn't expecting it to lean so hard on the ice cream land with the kart racing and everything.
Right. I actually heard, speaking of Japan again and the things they love, I hear that was that part of the movie in particular was just huge over there. They just love Sugar Crush.
I think they just called it like Sweet Racing. Like they didn't call it Wreck-It Ralph. They just basically straight up said, no, this is called like Sweet Racing or something like that.
And Japan was
or
like,
Sugar
okay.
Rush. Yeah, Sugar Rush. But so this part of the demo, interestingly, multiple keyblades. Mm-hmm. So there's the Infinity Badge, Smile Gear, and the Ever After. And the Ever After has a finish, which is Rapunzel's tower is summoned out of the ground, dealing damage to every enemy nearby.
Wow.
And Mike said that was his keyblade of choice.
Yeah, I can understand why. That would fix what ails you.
Yeah, right? I like the idea of different keyblades being available that have different finishes. It sounds like the combat, to me, is just take the original hack and slash action of Kingdom Hearts and just turn it up to 15,000, basically.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
I mean, just don't worry about whether it makes sense. It's just here for the bright, shiny colors and the explode, and you are powering yourself up. And look at all the references, and this is cool. So.
Yeah, I think Mike mentioned that. They just kind of go like all out with all the shinies this time around.
Yeah, so... It's not a bad thing necessarily.
If you have something as ridiculous as like Disney and SquareSoft, like to begin with, like I guess maybe that was even one of my main problems with the games to begin with was it took itself a little too seriously. But
and I actually don't mind that the combat is super over the top and crazy,
right?
Because the combat in the original Kingdom Hearts was pretty boring. Because it was the same stuff over and over again.
Right.
And over the years, they just kept kind of layering on extra stuff. And the point was to make it less rote.
Right.
Because it was just like hack, hack, slash, do some magic, do some dodge, hack, hack, slash. And it got old.
Yeah.
Undeniably. So I feel like the gameplay is so... secondary to the overall enjoyment of Kingdom Hearts. What people really want to see is the different kingdom characters interacting with one another's story. Am I wrong?
No, I think you're absolutely right. I could see how that would be a lot of fun, especially in this day and age of everything's crossovers.
Yeah, no, Kingdom Hearts fits perfectly in this age of, you know, Avengers Infinity War.
Exactly.
So there are like multiple different systems, reactions, attractions, the Link system. Tons going on. It sounds confusing. I'm sure it's not nearly as confusing as it actually is. Mm-hmm. You're in a toy store, which is pretty sizable, and your journey carries you through a game store. You fight the dragon-like Supreme Smasher from a game called Monstrous Monsters and Babies and Toddlers, where you have to fight what looks like to be an off-brand Disney's Descendants doll. Completing the latter event ends the second part of the demo. Mike liked the game. He thought it cool. Looked cool. I haven't been able to watch any video of what the game actually looks like in motion, but it looks quite lovely.
Yeah, it looks very nice.
So it's here. It's coming. It's coming out. How does this make you feel inside, Nadia?
It makes me feel like anything is possible. And next thing you know, we'll see unicorns running through the streets.
Shut up. Yeah, I have to be perfectly honest. I will play Kingdom Hearts 3 because I have to, but I'm not a big Kingdom Hearts fan. No, and I think I've said this on the podcast. I don't want to be a killjoy.
No, absolutely.
I think that lots of people like Kingdom Hearts, and I think that that's great, actually. And I think there's a lot to like the series. It going all the way back to 2002 when I played it for the first time on the PS2, it never really tickled my fancy. It lost me at... the Tarzan section. The original game lost me at the Tarzan level, which was dense and kind of boring to look at.
Right.
And it just really didn't do it for me. And then years later, I got a PS2 and another copy, and I tried it again. Failed. My partner started playing it, and she got as far as Monstro. And I was always so let down by how the execution of it, because it was just a succession of really bland multicolored chambers finishing with you finding Monstro's heart. And I was just like, this could have been done so much better.
Yeah.
I didn't like this section. So give me a good old turn-based RPG any day of the week. That's just me.
Well,
but I loved seeing Selphie in the Final Fantasy X crew on the beach. I loved the random appearance of one of the cooler characters from who's from Final Fantasy X, making an appearance in Hades.
Yeah,
you know who I'm talking about with the hood and the sunglasses.
Yeah, that dude. I know his name starts with a Z, but I can't remember the rest of it.
A Zed. This is how we know that Nadia is Canadian.
Apologies.
But it's going to be the end of an era. I know Katie's going to be very happy.
Katie's going to be very happy. She probably plays it and it's not going to live up to her expectations. She's going to be sad.
I don't know. She seems pretty sanguine about Kingdom Hearts these days. Like, she's not like full fangirl or anything.
Right.
She's not like, I'm so invested in the Kingdom Hearts universe. I love Kingdom Hearts, etc. She's like, no, whatever. I am totally down with. I'm down with it. I understand its limitations. It's kind of silly. It was a thing that I grew up with.
Right,
but at the same time, I think things that you grow up with are powerful, right?
Yeah, absolutely. And I'm like you with the series. I don't despise it. I don't hate it by any means. And I'll give it a try. I'm really hoping that the story I can follow it, not having played much of the previous games. So.
I'm just relieved that we're done with the teases, because the teases go back so far.
They go back forever.
We were teasing it in like Birth by Sleep.
Yep.
We were teasing it like, I think it was last year, the Kingdom Hearts, God, was it 2.8? I think it was called 2.8, came out, and it had the Dream Drop Distance, and then it had an extra thing that had one of the Birth by Sleep characters, and then they had a hands-off tech demo that was basically teasing a large portion of Kingdom Hearts 3.
Right.
And we've seen so many teasers over the years about the technology or story elements or whatever they were working on it for it. So thank God it's finally coming
out.
Yeah,
now we can start over again with a bunch of like 3.1, 3.2, 3.3. Just keep on going down the line until we get to 4.
I'm going to say a nice thing about Kingdom Hearts now.
Mm-hmm.
And that nice thing is, unlike Final Fantasy, you can play all of the Kingdom Hearts on one system.
That is true.
Which is the PlayStation 4. They released all of them, all the handheld games, all of the console games, Chain of Memories, you name it, it's all there.
Yep.
On the PS4. So you can enjoy all of it if you want. That's great. Why the hell are not all of the Final Fantasies like this?
I know.
Why?
Right? Like, God, at least give me, like, the ones that are less accessible now, like, you know, say 1 through 6 or 1 through 7. I don't care. Just a nice collection, a nice Final Fantasy collection.
I know that porting a game to a system is not an easy thing. And if you just take the PSN games and drop them onto a disc, people are going to get all mad.
Yeah.
Maybe. I don't know. But if you give me the original console versions that are reasonably translated to the PS4, and you include like Final Fantasy X, Final Fantasy XII,
mm-hmm.
Final Fantasy XV, maybe, that's a heck of a collection.
Yeah.
And it feels like a missed opportunity, because it feels like so much of the work is already done.
I agree.
9 got ported out to the PS4. Am I wrong? It's on the PS4.
Yeah, that's what I played it on. It was great. I enjoyed it.
7 and 8. I know 7's on the is on PSN.
Yeah.
It has like various things, and it's like the PC port.
Yeah.
Come on, guys. Come on. Do right by the fans for a change, and release the Final Fantasy Anniversary Collection. Kingdom Hearts has you beat on that front.
Yep, absolutely. So.
A Okay, Nadia, so you are playing Shin Megami Tensei Strange Journey for the first time. You just wrote an article on the site, and that article is called Playing Strange Journey Redux as a Persona Fan is So Weird Yet So Familiar. And I was wondering if you could kind of give me a rundown of what the main thrust of that article is.
Well, as I said in the article, I have played Persona 4 and I have played Persona 5, and this is my first Shin Megami Tensei game. And I knew it would be different to a certain degree, but I wasn't 100% clear on how different and in what ways. Like, I knew it was a dungeon crawler, so I was expecting, like, you know, the navigation to be kind of a little bit straightforward, like, you know, kind of tile by tile, room by room, the way it is in, like, you know, most dungeon crawlers. That was fine. That wasn't a surprise. The thing that surprised me, I suppose, is that it's less about fighting with your human allies, which is what Persona is about, more about fighting with demons. And the demons are, I think, a lot more disposable for that reason, because you have to stay one step ahead. You have to keep recruiting and combining demons and making them stronger and stronger. Whereas Persona is really, it really is a lot more character-driven. Your friends are first and foremost, and the personas they use are kind of almost like they supplement the way your friends attack. They're basically your friend's magic system. And even in the case with the protagonist for Persona 4, Persona 5, even the personas, even though they're wild cards and they can make and use any persona you want, even their initial personas are still very much part of their character. And that's not so much the case in at least in Shin Megami Tensei Strange Journey Redux. So I was a little bit unprepared for that whole disposable element. It's not that I like it, like, it's fine. It's not that I disagree with it or anything, but it was a little bit like, oh, well, the friendship with my demons has ended. Battle strategy.
Friendship has ended with Jack Frost.
Yeah. Yeah, I hung on to poor Jack Frost as long as possible, but I was like, well, sorry, dude, you just ain't cutting it no more. And I combined him, and I can't remember who I made, but yeah, he's long gone.
Jack Frost is always a great starting point.
Yeah, he was for a long time. I'm still using Shisa, which is a really good, another, like, pretty good starter that I've actually hung on to for a while.
Yeah, anytime you can get abilities like Rampage,
mm-hmm.
where you're going in and you can hit enemies with multiple hits for physical damage, or you can start getting those heavy nuke attacks,
yes,
or that kind of thing. Anything that's going to just hit really hard, no matter whether it's whether or not it's a weakness or not, mm-hmm. is kind of ideal. So how are you finding the difficulty?
There is a casual mode that I have switched back and forth from here and there.
Mm.
I try to keep it on normal mode because, to be honest, casual's not too much of a challenge once you get the feel for the game. I kind of like the challenge that comes with staying one step ahead and making sure I have demons that I can, you know, use against my enemies. I like that kind of strategy element of, like, balancing my party with them. But sometimes it just... my main problem, I guess, is that sometimes the enemies just hit too damn hard and they take way too much freaking damage.
Yeah, I mean, that can... Especially once you hit some of the bosses.
Exactly.
The bosses are really tough.
Yeah, yeah.
This game does not pull any punches, and what it comes down to often is grinding.
Comes down to grinding, and also you do have to make some interesting choices with your demons that you keep company with, because your alignment, if you have the same alignment as a demon... and you hit the weak spot of a demon, the demons who share your alignment will join in on your attack, which is very, very handy, although not an end-all be-all to your problems.
Yes, alignment is extremely important in SMT Strange Journey. It affects so much, and I was like, what do you think about that?
I have not found a way to change my alignment. I'm not sure how it's done, except maybe if I'm a jerk to everyone. I haven't tried that yet.
Well, I think that's something you got to figure out, right?
Yeah, let's see, where am I?
What is your alignment?
Right now, I'm just neutral.
True neutral.
True neutral, 100% neutral. I see myself as more of a lawful neutral type in real life, so I'm okay.
How
with,
far are you?
What's that?
Lawful neutral. Lawful neutral. Interesting.
Yeah.
I think I'm lawful evil myself.
Why are you... What have you done? Who have you killed?
Well, I mean, I'm not going to tell you.
All right.
I'm not going to tell you where the bodies are buried. But I'm definitely not chaotic evil.
No.
Definitely lawful evil. Not lawful good. Come on. I mean, lawful goods are assholes.
Yeah, they're stuck up, you know, paladin types. Boring.
Definitely not chaotic good. They're reform and lawful evil.
Oh, okay, that makes sense. What about neutral? Are you not true neutral?
No. Not right in between. I got opinions.
That's true.
I'm not beige, no offense.
Maybe I'm more of a chaotic neutral. But either way, I find myself more on the neutral scale.
I think chaotic neutral is a good way to put you,
yeah.
Nadia.
Yeah.
Yeah. I would love to. I think Katie is the chaotic evil one on the staff.
She's totally chaotic evil. I say if anyone's close.
She'd burn it all down. You never know.
I think Mike is the chaotic.
Mike is lawful good.
He's not lawful good.
Oh, he's lawful. He's so lawful good. Come on.
He is pretty angelic.
Mike is very lawful good.
But he's so sweet, though.
I'm not sure where to put Matt, to be perfectly honest.
Yeah, I can't get a feel for him yet. Maybe I need to work on that.
Yes, we need to get to feel for this guy that we've been working together with for a year.
Well, on a D&D scale, that's a totally different sort of personality measure.
Well, you know, it's important. You got to put everybody in the D&D scale.
Absolutely.
Yes, and with that in mind, so what I was asking, how far are you?
Let's see, I just finished, I think it was the third dungeon.
Were you at the mall?
I just finished the mall.
Oh, man, the mall was really hard.
The mall was a pain in the ass because you have the... First of all, you're chasing the boss around the whole thing. Second mm-hmm. of all, there's like this weird phase shift that you have to go through to get to all the places in the dungeon, and it's a hard dungeon to navigate. And some of the enemies will screw you up if you don't do what's right. Like there's the, I can't remember what's called, the Niko Matata, or the cat lady, the weird fetishy cat lady, who if you hit her with a physical attack, she'll retaliate almost certainly, and she'll cause like your character to basically lose its mind and get muddled and will attack your allies. So yeah, that's the thing.
The thing that I love, the difference that I love between Strange Journey and Persona 4, say, is Persona 4 is like Buffy the Vampire Slayer. It's mm-hmm. the Scoobies, right?
Yeah, yeah.
After school, we're fighting evil. And Strange Journey is something totally different.
It is.
Where it's almost Lovecraftian.
Very much so.
Where you have normal people going into this terrifying thing. It's like a wound in the earth.
Yeah.
That has a scary German name, if I recall correctly.
Yeah, Schwarzfeld.
And immediately everything goes wrong.
Yeah.
And everything gets very creepy, very fast, and as you delve deeper and deeper, you discover madness, essentially, and God knows what else. And it's like the first time you step into the shopping mall and how disconcertingly normal it is, but also completely off.
Yeah, even the music is like, it's like Muzak, but like has like that weird demonic chanting in the background. It's really interesting.
Yeah, it's really good in that regard,
yeah,
right?
Yeah, it's a very atmospheric game, and it is it does kind of fire in all cylinders, whereas Persona 4 and 5, they start you off more slowly. You get to know your friends, you get this and that and that and that. But with Shin Megami Tensei Strange Journey Redux, you basically hit the ground running, practically.
And it feels like there's an apocalyptic feel to it, and you feel like you're alone.
Yes.
And it just has such a different flavor, frankly, from almost any SMT game that I've played. A lot of SMT games, I mean, your average SMT game is like, it's set in Tokyo,
right?
And there are demons, and the apocalypse is happening, right? And this goes in a fairly different direction. Like, high schoolers are not involved.
No, there are no high schoolers for miles.
It's fascinating, and obviously, all of the systems going at the same time. It does not pull any punches. I think it's just a tremendous RPG, and I'm really glad that it's back on the 3DS, and I'm really glad that you're playing it.
Yeah, it's actually an interesting thing I find about it that I didn't write about in the article is you do have some of the demons who have very basic kind of predictable messages about humanity, like, oh, maybe you're the real demon. It's like, oh, very good, fourth grader, get out of my way. But you also have this... The thing that keeps it interesting for me is, number one, there's this there's this angel following you around, and you don't know what his motives are, but he's influencing one of your crew members who has had, like, really traumatic experiences at the hands of the demons, so she won't have anything to do with demons, which means she won't summon them. So she has an angel on her side who's helping her, and she's very, like, grateful for that. And on the other side, you have this friend of yours who is like, you know, these angels are bullshit. Like, you know, they're just, like, all wholly stuck up, you know, one-dimensional. You can't trust them. So you don't know who to trust. That's like, you know, okay, you're in this dark, evil place with no idea who's right and who's wrong. And I find that very compelling. Plus, you're being chased, or at least I have been chased a couple of times by this really strong girl who has kicked my ass a couple of times. And, yeah, so I don't know where her deal is, so I'm sure I'll find out eventually.
SMT Strange Journey was the first SMT game where I really got a taste of what SMT is truly all about. Mm-hmm. The first person dungeon crawling, the demon negotiation,
yeah.
That kind of thing.
Yeah.
After playing Persona 3 and 4. So... it was an interesting, very different transition, I think. And there were certainly familiarities to the way that everything worked. But at the same time, like, it's just a completely different feel to everything.
It is. So. Can you negotiate with demons in Persona 3?
No.
Okay, so that same with that in 4. 5 was like...
Right.
5 was my first real taste of demon negotiation, so at least I knew what that was about.
I thought that was a cool thing that they brought into Persona 5. They brought in a lot of aspects of the traditional SMT, mm-hmm. you know, setting in Tokyo and that kind of thing, with the demon negotiations. I was like, oh, okay, so they brought it a little closer to the kind of the original, the normal series, right. The mainline series. So a lot of people might say Persona is the mainline series at this point.
It's been looking that way a little bit.
So yeah, SMT Strange Journey, we're not going to review it because it's a port, and it's a fairly obscure port, and unfortunately we don't have a lot of time, but it is coming out, and we're really looking forward to it, so it is out now, so you should play it now, and enjoy it on the Nintendo 3DS, a real gem of an RPG, because the 3DS just won't die.
Nope, it's going to hang in there like a demon itself.
You and Anthony were talking about lots of different stuff, and I'm not entirely sure what. So you were talking about Castlevania, and you're also talking about long lost RPGs that you desperately want to play but probably never will. Ryder Kicker said, Agnello talking about the lengths he took to play some obscure RPGs made me think of the pointless things I've done throughout the years in my desire to play more Japanese games. I was in receipt of a modded PS1 for quite a long time, but all I did with it was play my legit copies of FF7 and 8. I was told it could play bootleg games, and the only game that wasn't original was a Tony Hawk Pro Skater 2, which was oddly a black disc. It wasn't until, like the late PS2 era, that I bothered to test my PS1's capabilities, and my first purchase was overpaying for Maxwell CDRs at the local Staples instead of going to J&R. Nadia, I said goodbye to my PS2 the other day.
Oh no, what did you do with it?
I sold it.
Really? Why?
Yes, it was time. I can't plug it into any of my monitors anymore.
Who the hell is buying a PS2? I guess retro collectors.
The internet. I mean,
that was a stupid question.
I sold it as a lot.
Uh-huh.
I sold it. Well, first of all, it had a wireless Logitech controller.
Okay.
It had a flip top that I installed myself so that you could play, Japanese games. And I had a bunch of Japanese games in addition to a couple of Western games. And I was basically saying, yeah, if you want a Japanese and a PS2 that can play both, here you go.
Wow.
Somebody was willing to pay $100 for it.
Not bad.
I felt so melancholy when I said goodbye to it.
Oh, yeah, I would. I'm still hanging on to all my consoles because I got to have most of them stuffed in a closet somewhere rather than sell them because I'm an idiot.
No. I think that at some point I just look at a game and I go, I am never going to play this again.
Yeah.
I want to, I wish to, but I know in my heart that I have finished this game, I've enjoyed this game. I've gotten everything I want out of it. I've gotten everything I want out of this system. Mm-hmm. And it's time to go.
Yeah, and so. That takes a lot of, you know what, that takes a lot of inner strength. I don't care. It takes some inner strength to say goodbye to something like that.
It does. If I didn't, I'd still have my PSP, for God's sake.
I still have mine.
A system that I'm definitely never playing again.
Poor PSP.
I got it in my Vita. Yeah. I can get a lot of games on it. There are some games that I miss, but I actually played pretty much all the games I got on my PSP to death. Mm-hmm. I was sad to see it go, but whatever. It happens. One day I will say goodbye to my Vita.
Yeah, it happens.
But not yet.
No, not yet. You got to hang in there not for a little yet. Bit longer.
Monkey Dog POZ says, ever since I learned of their existence, I really wanted to play the Tengai Makio Far East of Eden games. As far as I'm aware, none of them are translated except for Zero, which only came out a few months ago. I haven't given it a try yet, but hearing this discussion is making me think I should jump on that, although Zero seems different from the other mainline games to me. I particularly want to play the spin-off, The Fourth Apocalypse, since it takes place in a satirical fantasy version of 1800s America. Also interesting, and apparently Joe Hisaishi of Ghibli fame did some of the music for the second game.
Oh,
interesting. I've heard of these games, but I've never played them.
Yeah.
Have you played them?
No, I've heard of them, like you, but I've never played them.
Bobby Watson says, Panzer Dragoon Saga was my white whale for quite some time, but I got to finish it last fall, and it was pretty much as great as everyone says. I love it when somebody says that.
Are they wrong? I know I've never played it, so I don't know.
I mean, you know, sometimes it's like, oh, everybody says this game's amazing, but in fact it is not amazing, and I'm just going to tell you why.
There's actually someone, I won't name names for their protection, but I was at an event with them, and I was on a bus. We were riding to wherever, and he was behind me, and I said, we're talking about, like, you know, rare games, and he mentioned he had the Saturn. I said, oh, do you have Panzer Dragoon Saga? And he's like, yes, I do. And I said, is it as good as everyone says? And he just slowly shakes his head, doesn't say a word.
Wow.
Yep.
Gasp.
Yep.
Okay.
Controversy.
Well, just send me their address after this podcast so I can go and break their legs.
I can't do that. He's such a nice guy.
Bobby Watson finishes, by the way, my new white whales are probably the first four Sakura Taisen entries, which as far as I know, have not been translated. I own all four, but I can't read Japanese yet, so someday I might get to play them. Funny Color Blue says, Dark Savior for Sega Saturn. Back in 96, my friend got it for his birthday. I thought it was the hottest JRPG of all time. From the very beginning of the game, you're escorting some serial-killing monster to Prisoner's Island of some sort, but it escapes. So your very first mission from the get-go is to reach the captain's cabin in 4 minutes in order to trap the monster or something. I failed at that. But then, like, every battle in the game is like a 2D fighting game with rounds. I only played this game for an extremely brief moment of my life, but I totally remember how cool it was. Fighting games like Street Fighter and Virtual Fighter were huge at the time, so for JRPGs to use them as random battles just blew my mind. And then to put multiple endings on top of that. And yeah, and Max Bebo reminds us that, and this was at the time, May 13th, which is earlier this week, but RPG Limit Break, which was 7 straight days of RPG speedrunning in support of NAMI, the National Alliance of Mental Illness. And you should go check it out on Twitch. It's already finished, but it was 7 straight days, so it's not done yet, but it will be done by the time of this podcast. Yeah. But you can probably go check out the archived versions at twitch.tv/RPG Limit Break. And so before we finish, these Pokemon leaks, what do you make of them, Nadia?
Sorry, you say Pokemon leaks? Oh, leaks. Yeah. I thought you said Pokemon leagues. Like, what? Like
Pokemon leagues. What do you make of all these Pokemon leaks?
I think you're on the money when you say you think it's going to be a kind of a spin-off. I mean, people are predicting a Kanto remake or something of that nature. Mm-mm. But no, I can't.
Set in Kanto because familiarity.
Right, right.
And, but it's, I don't know what they're doing. It might be something fun and interesting, but it seems like they're vaguely connecting it to Pokemon Go. They're experimenting with AR. Mm-hmm. They're being what they do, which is trying new things. And it does not sound like it's related to the RPGs at all.
Probably not.
And Okay.
Yeah, which is...
I mean, if it's starring Pikachu and Eevee with no trainer, it's not an it's not a mainline RPG.
No, that would make it maybe one of the dungeon games, really.
Yeah, which it's not, so...
Right.
And if it's a spinoff, it's like, shrug. I wrote... It was funny because I wrote this big article for the site. It was like, I don't think Pokemon Switch is coming out this year. And my reasoning was that usually if they're going to announce a new generation, they do it. They never do it in an event. They never do it at E3. Mm-hmm. They always do it on like a stream or an announcement video or something. And then they basically dribble out information for the rest of the year.
Yeah.
And make it a big deal. And then they hold one event at the end of the year where the press get to meet a couple of the Japanese developers, interview them,
right.
And then the game comes out.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah. And
they weren't doing that. It was already May.
Yeah.
And it just felt very late in the day to announce a Pokemon generation for the Switch, especially because it would be the earliest that a Pokemon generation has ever been announced for a new console. And... then, of course, immediately I start hearing rumors of Pokemon Switch coming. There's going to be some kind of event soon, maybe.
Yeah.
And I'm just like...
No, I think that just... you're looking at a spinoff, maybe something that gives us an idea of what the game will look like on the Switch. Like,
well, who knows? Maybe we're totally wrong. Maybe it is a Kanto
remake. That would be hilarious because...
oh, my God. A Kanto remake on Switch would be amazing.
That would be amazing. But... it's definitely not a new Pokemon game, because like a whole new mainline game, because you're right when thinking back on like how these events are revealed, just even like this, having the starters are such a big unveiling, like, and they have that hype, drip feed, like just down to a science. I can't see them.
And people are like saying, oh, there's going to be some kind of event in Japan, maybe. And I'm going, okay, so they never introduce them through press events. So what is going on here?
Yeah.
But, I mean, yeah, no, I think that what has been leaked is probably real. And I'm lukewarm, to be honest, based on what I've read. But
I'm sure it's cute and fun. See. Like, Detective Pikachu is very cute and very fun for what it is. So,
yeah. All right. So, Axe of Blood God is a U.S. Gamer podcast. You can find us on iTunes, Stitcher, wherever podcasts are sold. And make sure to give us a review. We love hearing from you. We love when you have something nice to say about the podcast. Please give us a nice review if you want to, if you have something good to say. Naturally, as always, I am on Twitter at @the_catbot. Nadia is on Twitter at Nadia Oxford. Nadia, did you know... So, speaking of Pokemon, apparently I recorded a Pokemon... podcast about Retronauts like a couple years ago, and I don't even remember I don't remember that at all. Completely spaced it.
Because I just remember apparently you had an argument with Mackie about Pokemon.
Did I?
You did, because he's not really big into Pokemon at all, and you know, you were trying to convince him, like, okay, well, just because you don't like it doesn't mean it's bad, and
interesting.
That's a tittle-tattle I've heard. Just I haven't listened to it myself.
Oh. You know, maybe I should listen to it someday.
You should.
I don't listen to podcasts that I've been on.
Neither do I. I'm so self-conscious about my voice. I'm just like, nah.
I think years of editing podcasts have gotten me over that.
I guess it would.
Because it's kind of like, I mean, okay, whatever, right? But also, I took part in the recording of that podcast. So in effect, I've already listened to it.
That's a good point.
Does that make sense to you?
No, that absolutely makes a point. Like, why would you listen to what you've already know? Why would you listen to what you know is being said?
Logic. Exactly. I could listen to Blood God once it's already out, but I've listened to it so many times during the editing of the podcast.
There you go.
And also I recorded it. So
solid reason.
But one result could be that I literally forgot that I recorded this podcast. So I'm actually curious as to what I said, because people sometimes tweet at me and go, "You're just on fire in this podcast, Kat." And I'm like, "Am I? What did I say? I don't know.
It's happened to me with people sending me articles I wrote like 3 years ago saying, "Wow, this is a great article." I'm like, "Thanks. I don't remember this at all. Was I drunk? Was I asleep when I wrote this? I don't know."
Just completely asleep at the wheel.
Yeah. Just rolled my face back and forth in the keyboard.
Well, I was like going, are you referring to the Pokemon podcast I recorded in like 2010? The Pokemon podcast. Because I know I recorded a couple of them for Retronauts back in the 1UP days, yeah. But what are you talking? Okay.
Right.
And then I started to have vague recollections of us talking a lot about the merchandising and, like, the anime, but I'm going to listen to it again. Okay.
Let me know what you think.
All right, absolutely. So, yeah, I'm officially back.
Yay.
We'll be back again next week, even though the next episode after this one is technically Memorial Day. We're still going to record an episode. We'll just record it. We record on Friday, so it's no problem, right?
Fixed.
So there you go. And until then, for Nadia and myself, thanks for listening and happy adventuring.